The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
My name is Andrea, for those of you who I haven't met. So tonight I thought of reflecting on simplicity and how, in many ways, what we actually do in the practice takes us more and more in the direction of a simple mind, simplicity, a simple mind that just can simply be aware of what's happening in the present moment. A simple mind is not a mind that is unaware of what's happening, but just this kind of a mind that is very naturally aware, without the complexity of our plans, of our agendas, of our beliefs. This is essentially the kind of direction that the mindfulness practice takes us, is towards a mind that is much more simple. And yet this isn't necessarily in our kind of our culture. When we're learning something, taking in new information, we think we need to kind of gather up the information, and there is some usefulness to that in the meditation practice and in the study of the Dharma. There's a lot of information that the Buddha taught. I mean, the Buddha taught for 45 years or so, and there's tons of books of things that he taught. They're kind of like, we could say there's a couple different kinds of things he taught. One set of things he taught were practices, how to be attentive, how to be aware of what's happening in the present moment, and that those practices help us to transform our relationship to the world and to ourselves. Essentially, the project or the question the Buddha asked himself when he began his practice was, is it possible to be free from suffering? He looked out at the world and saw a lot of suffering in the world, and that was his question. Human beings seem to be suffering a lot. Can we live as human beings and not suffer? And so he just went off in search of an answer to that question. And in a way, I think what he discovered is that the simple mind can answer that question. And so some of what he taught are practices that help the mind to become very simple, to be able to see what's happening in our minds. And that's the other set of things he taught, is descriptions of what is going on in there. Those descriptions of what's going on in our minds, now that's not simple. That's incredibly complex. The descriptions of how our minds get caught up in suffering and struggles and the patterns and habits that we get caught in. He described how that works and described that seeing how that works and understanding how that works in the sense of when we witness it, you know, and really the kind of one of the keys in the seeing with the simplicity is that when we see what's happening in the present moment and we see certain functions going on in there, certain patterns of greed, of aversion, it's reactive habits of mind. When we actually see those happening in the present moment, and it takes a simple mind to see that, a mind that can just simply witness, oh, this is what's happening in the present moment. There is anger arising right now. That takes a kind of a simple mind to be able to just witness that and not then jump on it with its agendas and plans and beliefs and views about what to do in the case of that aversion or anger, but just to say, oh, that's what's happening right now. It also takes some trust that that is valuable. To have that simple approach to meeting experience is valuable. I certainly, when I first met this practice and kind of got that instruction, you know, the very first little bit of wisdom I gleaned from this book I read about Buddhism, didn't understand much of what was in there, but understood this little bit of maybe you could just be aware that there are reactive things happening and just watch them. And I had no idea how that would work. So it's just, that's the simplicity of it, is just, can you notice what's going on in the moment and know it as something that's happening in the moment? It sounds, until we actually start doing it and watching what happens when we explore our experience in that way, our complex minds of all the ways we tend to engage in the world and think about things and try to figure things out, our complex minds cannot fathom that that would be helpful. And so, and yet maybe we choose to try it, to choose to step into it as I did, you know, step into, well, I have no idea how this is going to work, but maybe I'll try it. Maybe I'll see what happens if I explore just knowing this is happening in the moment. Well, what happens when we do that? With that simple mind, just being aware, oh, this is anger happening in the present moment. That simple mind, in the immediacy of knowing that, also recognizes this is not helpful. This is painful in the moment. It's creating suffering here and now. And so our minds, in this way of meeting experience simply, begin to recognize when what's going on in the moment is helpful and when it's not helpful. And this simple understanding that begins to happen, this is really the way, the mechanism by which the simple mind helps us to transform. Helps us to transform the ways in which we are caught and struggle to a letting go of those habits and patterns. And it comes from that simple recognition, the mind recognizing this habit or pattern of mind is creating stress and suffering right now in this being. Typically, when we're noticing or when we're engaged in some kind of a reactive pattern, like anger, for instance, if we're engaged in that, we are, you know, full of our ideas about why this is a good idea to follow this anger, why it's a good idea to, you know, take that energy and run with it. In my own experience around anger in particular, as I watched my mind with it, I saw some of those beliefs. And one of those beliefs is, this anger is going to make that other person really miserable. That'll serve them right. And what I discovered, actually, I mean, watching this experience, you know, it's like, well, what I began to realize is, well, the person that I was angry with lived 7,000 miles away. They had no idea I was angry. It wasn't doing anything to them, but it was burning me up. Amazingly, that was an aha. You know, it's like, wow, this hurts. This is not useful. And the mind began to understand something about anger in that way. And through the exploration of it, there was a releasing of that habit, that pattern of anger. So just this simple mind, this simple curiosity of, can I know this experience instead of acting on it? Over the course of the first few months of my practice, had a radical transformation for me around how much I was caught in anger, how there was a tremendous amount of letting go that happened in just a few months of doing this really simple practice. Just recognizing when I was angry and being aware that I was angry. my understanding at this point, I didn't understand then what was going on. I did know that that anger was diminishing, that I was nowhere near as caught by it, that I wasn't suffering as much anymore. But I didn't know why it was happening. I just knew that this simple thing that I was doing seemed to be helping. And in retrospect, I understand that, you know, each time I saw it, the system began to see, yes, that hurts. And it's like the system, the organism began to be curious about its own participation in this suffering. It began to recognize that that suffering that was happening was being produced because of something that was going on in this mind. The arising of the anger itself was the suffering. And so the system began kind of reorienting, kind of letting go, understanding this is not necessary to do this. There are things, of course, around our reactive patterns that, you know, so I think one of the reasons we're so hooked to our reactive patterns is that they do kind of, they serve us in some way. You know, so the anger that I had at this person, there was something legitimate in there. There was a kind of a discernment that was going on. And that discernment, you know, we don't have to throw out the discernment. But the discernment is one thing, and the reactivity around that understanding is another. And so that's something that we also begin to see with this simple awareness. The simple awareness begins to kind of help us tease apart what's being discerned in experience. This is what's actually happening. This person did this thing. This other person did this thing. It's kind of just the kind of recognition of what was going on, and the ways in which we might notice the ways in which various people are harmed by certain things, and that all can be noticed and recognized without the added complexity of the anger or the reactivity to it, the aversion to it. And in a way, without that, as the mind begins to kind of tease those apart, so again, these are very complex processes going on in the mind, beliefs and views kind of overlaid with this understanding of what's happening and then how it all gets tangled up into reactivity. These are very complex things that are going on in our mind. And yet the awareness of what's happening can begin to kind of tease this apart, can tease apart the reactivity from the discernment. And then perhaps there's room for a response instead of a reaction, a response out of compassion instead of out of reactivity. And so this process of exploring our experience in this way, and in daily life on the cushion, you know, we see when we sit down, often what we see, even as we settle our minds with the practices of connecting with the breath, we often see kind of what's in the way. We see the resistance. We see the, you know, the thoughts from earlier in the day kind of coming in and taking over our minds and producing reactivity. We see all of that. The seeing of it isn't isn't a problem. It is, you know, can we then bring our simple mind to knowing this is what's happening? In effect, you know, this simple process of, oh, this is this, I'm trying to be with the breath. We see the complexity kind of comes in. One of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, says that, you know, basically he points to this simplicity. He says, you know, the meditating mind needs to be simple in order to see what's going on in there. And in a way, we can think about, you know, mindfulness itself, this function of being aware of what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. That's a pretty simple functioning of our minds. It's like a mirror, you know, a mirror reflects what's in the room. A mirror is pretty simple, but what it reflects can be very complex. Sometimes it might just reflect a blank wall, but sometimes it could reflect a massively complex scene. But the mirror itself is pretty simple. And so the mirror is what mindfulness is. And it's a natural, it's akin to a natural functioning of our minds, this self-reflective capacity of our minds. What we cultivate in mindfulness practice isn't quite just that natural self-reflective capacity, because we cultivate it from a particular perspective. It's not just that we know what's happening. We understand it from the perspective, and this sounds, again, like not much, but we understand that what's happening in the present moment is a happening in the present moment. So, for instance, with a reactive state of mind, frustration, for example, with this kind of mindfulness, we understand frustration is arising in the present moment as an arising in the present moment. That kind of brings in the perspective of this is the human experience of frustration, rather than my own relationship to frustration. It's just, this is the experience. Frustration is happening in the present moment. And this is what it's like for frustration to be happening in the present moment. That's not our usual perspective when we become aware of frustration. Our usual perspective when we become aware of frustration would be something like, oh, frustration's happening in the present moment. How do I fix the thing that I'm frustrated about? That perspective is not curious about the experience of frustration per se. It's interested in figuring out how to get rid of that feeling by fixing things. And so this perspective, so the self-reflective capacity turned towards really a very simple reflection. Oh, this is what's happening in the present moment, and it's just happening. This is what it's like for that to be happening. That's a simple like expression of some of the wisdom or the perspective the Buddha encouraged us to have. And as we do that, as we be curious about, oh, well, okay, frustration's arising, and what's the experience of frustration arising? Oh, it hurts. There's tension. There's constriction in the system. That is a kind of suffering. And so our system begins to get a different kind of education about that mind state. Instead of thinking that mind state is helpful to help me to get rid of something, it understands that the state itself is suffering. Now again, something about that frustration may be discerning something in the world. That discernment can happen without the frustration. That's very subtle to begin to see, but it is possible to begin to see that distinction between the discernment that happens. That's not going the way I wanted it to go. The I wanted it to go is more of the tied up with the frustration. But, I thought it would go this way. It went that way. That's a discernment. The I wanted it to go that way, and it's a problem that it's going that way, is where the frustration is coming from. And so we're not throwing out discernment here, but we are exploring what it might mean. And what our systems begin to understand is that the add-on on top of the discernment is not necessary, and it is suffering. And so the system begins to reorient and kind of understand, figure out how to relate to that experience in a different way. Maybe with wisdom. This didn't happen. This happened. What are the conditions there? Maybe there's something that I need to learn about this instead of just the rising of frustration. And so this the simple mind begins to to see this, see in this way. So the simple mind is kind of like that mirror reflecting experience. Now, in the guided meditation, I encouraged a relaxation, which kind of begins to point us back to just the natural capacity that our minds have to be aware in this way. And that, again, points to the simplicity of this. In effect, by letting go of our thoughts, our beliefs, our agendas, we kind of step back into this more simple kind of awareness that has this power to help our system begin to reorient, shift its way towards letting go of its habits and patterns of reactivity. So there's a few similes about this simplicity, about this. The other piece I'd like to say too is this practice of being with experience in this simple way. It takes patience because in a moment of watching experience, we'll potentially learn something about, or our system learns something. We don't even necessarily have to consciously know what we're learning. As in my experience in the first few months of my practice, I didn't know what I was learning about anger. I just knew that this practice was helping me have less of it. So I didn't have the articulation of that I was learning that anger was, you know, painful. At one point I did recognize that this hurts, and I began to recognize some of the beliefs and views that were embedded in it. But there was a lot that I didn't understand, but this simple practice was allowing there to be this release. And yet it was happening over time. It wasn't like, you know, seeing this once or twice created a massive, like, you know, reorientation. It was a really gradual shift. And I would say that, you know, I didn't notice day by day a difference, but when I kind of looked back over 2 months, it's like, wow, it's really different now. There's a lot less anger than there used to be. And so the practice unfolded in an almost imperceptible way at times, you know, the way in which this shift happened. And so a couple of things, you know, that kind of in retrospect, I didn't have to understand how this would work. I did have to kind of trust and step into engaging with it, but I didn't have to understand how it would work. And I didn't have to see it changing day by day. I did recognize after some time, it's like, wow, this seems to help. And then sometimes there are kind of really specific, clear understandings that happen. When I had one of those after a couple of months of watching the anger, there was a very clear seeing of how anger was, how a thought was arising in the mind, and how there was a kind of an inclination to jump on that thought and think more thoughts in order to get angry at the person. But I could see in the moment that I had seen that thought that the anger wasn't there. And in the seeing of that, in the seeing that, oh, yeah, the mind wants to get angry, the conscious seeing of that and the kind of the system knowing from the months of having seen the experience of anger being painful, the system basically said, yeah, we're not going to do that. That doesn't make any sense to go there. I didn't have to do that. I didn't tell myself, oh, stop, don't go there. That was really the benefit of having seen the anger over a couple of months and seen the way that it was creating pain in the system. That is what allowed the mind to not go there. Because the mind understood, yeah, if you pick that up, yeah, the mind has the option to pick that up, but if we pick that up, that's going to hurt. And so the mind just basically said, I don't think so. So the understandings can be gradual in this way, but also can be kind of very clear. And in that moment, I did see the power of the practice. That was a pivotal moment for me in which it's kind of like I understood a little bit of how this practice works. And that was enough to have me sign on. It's like, yep, I'm going to do this. This is helpful. So, this is something of the simplicity and the gradual nature of the path. I love that the Buddha talks about the path as a gradual path and has several similes, which I'm going to share with you in a minute, about how it unfolds in this gradual way. Because while I have had a few of those experiences where it's really clear, I could probably count on two hands the number of experiences I've had that have been these like bursts of like insight that feel like, wow, everything's different. And even some of those, it feels in that moment like everything's different. But then, the next day it's like, wow, well, that's still happening. It didn't like just make that go away. So the vast majority of my own transformation has happened in this really gradual way, almost imperceptible. And so I appreciate that the Buddha pointed to that over and over again. So I did want to share a couple of similes. I've been looking at similes lately and finding them to be interesting to explore and unpack and reflect on. And I find that thinking about the similes kind of helps me to maybe learn something different or learn something new about what the Buddha was teaching. And in one of these similes, these three similes really speak to the topic that topic of simplicity and patience, really. So the simile is about a hen sitting on her eggs. And he says, suppose this hen has 8, 10, or 12 eggs. If she doesn't cover them rightly, warm them rightly, or incubate them rightly, then even though this wish may occur to her, oh, that my chicks might break through the eggshells with their spiked claws and beaks and hatch out safely. Still, it is not possible that the chicks will break through their eggshells with their spiked claws or beaks and hatch out safely. Why is that? Because the hen has not covered them rightly, warmed them rightly, or incubated them rightly. And he compares this to a person practicing who is not practicing rightly. So not practicing, maybe we could say, in this simple way. Not exploring the experience and noticing what's happening in the present moment, but more with an agenda to get something or to create something, create a particular state, for example. And he goes on to say on the other side, if the hen does incubate her eggs properly, nurture them properly, then it doesn't matter if she wishes for them to hatch out safely. They will hatch out safely because she has taken care of them. And he goes on to say that, likewise with somebody who is engaging in the practice in a skillful way, they don't have to wish for freedom or understanding, but it will happen. And so this image to me of the hen sitting on her eggs, nurturing them. There's a lot of imagery to that that I liked, because, you know, what is she doing? What she's doing is really simple. She's just sitting on those eggs, keeping them warm. You know, I decided to read a little bit about the brooding hens today to see, you know, can they even get off of the eggs? Well, apparently once a day they can get off of the eggs and you know, eat and take care of their business, and then they have to get back on with life. Not very long. I guess it depends on how warm it is outside, but I was reading these things, and people were saying, well, gee, if she's been off for an hour, those eggs might be bad. So, you know, you'll have to check that out. So, you know, it's not very long. You know, there has to be a lot of continuity, but it's a pretty simple thing that she has to do. Just sit there with the warmth, kind of this continuity of, you know, staying in contact, staying in touch with those eggs. And that to me speaks to the simplicity of being mindful with a kind of, you know, friendliness too. I mean, the warmth, the kind of the nurturing quality of the hen sitting on the eggs is very like the warmth or the friendliness of wise mindfulness. The kind of mindfulness that is able to meet what's happening, to not reject it, to not attach to it or hold on to it, but just to know this is what's happening. In the guided meditation, I mentioned everything can be allowed. Whatever's happening, that's a kind of attitude we explore bringing to our mindfulness. This is what's happening right now. Can it be allowed? Can I be aware of it? Just as it is. With that simple allowing, the system begins to recognize what's helpful and what's not helpful. And so really that allowing quality brings in this warmth or friendliness to the mindfulness. And the mindfulness also needs to kind of stay connected to experience. If we're, you know, mindful a little bit and then go off and think about things, and then mindful a little bit and go off and think about things, that'd be kind of like the hen getting up and every 5 minutes and going off to scratch out in the yard and dig for things, and then maybe come back and sit for a few minutes and then go off again. The eggs are not going to hatch in this way. And likewise with our mindfulness, there's something about this staying in touch, being in touch, but it's a really simple thing that we're doing. Just holding our experience with a very kind, warm-hearted attitude. Now, what's going on in the hen hatching her eggs? You know, the hen is just sitting there. You know, she's just sitting there keeping things warm. But what's going on inside those eggs? That's an amazingly complex happening. But she's not in charge of that. She doesn't make that happen. She doesn't make that development happen. She simply creates the conditions for that to happen. And that's also very similar to the way the practice unfolds, that this kind of meeting of our experience, the staying in touch, this friendly kind of connection to experience, the transformation, the kind of reorientation that our minds go through, it's kind of an amazing transformation, akin to the development of a chick hatching out of its shell. It's an amazing transformation that we are not in charge of. I think this is an important piece to remember, because we so often think of ourselves as needing to be in charge. And in the practice as well, you know, it's like, I need to make this wisdom happen. I need to be the one to figure out how to let go of this. When actually what happens is if we just stay with it, with this friendly, connected attention, the system, our the processes of our hearts and minds begin to figure out how to let go, how to transform. And so our job in the practice is simple: to create the conditions for the transformation to happen. We don't get to do the transformation. We don't get to decide how long it's going to take. And so this takes some patience. And trust, you know, some trust that this is actually transforming. This is actually useful. This is actually helpful. Like the hen sitting on her eggs. I don't know. Maybe there is something different that the hen feels as the eggs develop. Maybe feeling a little more movement or just some difference in the way the eggs are, that there's an understanding perhaps of it's heading in the right direction. We get that sense in our practice of things heading in the right direction. Like in my example, just in the first couple of months of exploring anger, recognizing this is headed in the right direction. There is more ease of heart. There is less being caught in this storm of anger, less, you know, being frozen with this rage. A huge shift in just a couple of months. And so there was this sense that there was a transformation happening. So the practice is simple, and then maybe we begin to get a sense or a flavor of things are shifting. But it still takes trust, because we don't really get to see sometimes how things are shifting. Gil has an example that I like around this same kind of notion of a gradual unfolding. He talks about the practice kind of being like chopping a piece of wood, a big log, and you take the hatchet and you bring the hatchet down on the log, and it goes, you know, it doesn't split immediately. You bring it down again. And maybe you see a little tiny line on the top. It's like it still doesn't split. You do that a bunch of times, you know, you do it a whole bunch of times. And at some point, the log splits. And I know I loved to chop wood when I was a kid, because I really loved that feeling of the hatchet just cleaving through the wood. And I appreciated that moment. And I kind of thought, well, I did it just right that time, you know. That's what I needed to do. And so how did I swing it that time? You know, what was the pressure? What was the angle? You know, but as Gil points out, you know, every single time that that hatchet hit the wood, it had a subtle effect on the wood to weaken the fiber in the wood. Every time it's hit, just a little subtle weakening. So repeated hits, that those have accumulated in a subtle way, that last time, that 89th time of hitting it, the log splits. But we don't get to see that subtle weakening. And our minds tend to attribute that major kind of event and try to figure out, well, what did I do right that time? But it's been the accumulation of the accumulation, and this is very much how the practice seems to unfold, the accumulation of seeing. And so it takes some trust that this is actually supporting us. At times, it can feel like there's a long, like, dry spell. It's like, I don't know, not much is happening. Nothing is happening. So it takes some trust at times to just sit on those eggs, you know, to not know what's going on inside the shells, that development that's happening. So the hatching that happens when it happens, it happens because the conditions were appropriate. It's a natural result of that. It's like, it's not magic. It's the natural unfolding. That's another piece that seems very appropriate or resonant for me with the practice, that the condition of bringing this kind of attention, this simple awareness to our experience, there's a very natural process or natural way that that takes us in the direction of letting go of reactivity and the cultivation of beautiful qualities, of compassion, of wisdom, of kindness, of patience, of joy. So it's a natural process. The simple activity sets in motion this natural process, these natural conditions. And so trust, patience about the kind of way in which we might not be aware of the transformation. A couple more analogies that are in this same sutta. They follow one after another. The next one, a completely different scenario. It's a carpenter using a tool, using an adze, which is a tool that allows you to kind of sculpt large pieces of wood. And he says that each day or each time that the carpenter uses this tool, a little bit of the handle will wear away. And he knows this because, you know, and you kind of know this, like I notice it with shoes almost immediately. You know, sometimes you get these slippers that there's no left and right, but you put your feet in them, and after a little while, it starts feeling weird if you put the wrong foot in, because your foot has kind of created this impression, and you know it. You can tell which foot. And I can envision with this ads, you know, the person picking up the handle with one hand versus the other and just knowing how does it fit, or, you know, just having the right place for the hand to fit. And the teaching here says that each time the person uses that tool, a little bit of the handle wears away. But the person won't know how much has worn away today and how much has worn away yesterday. And yet after some months, they are going to know, yes, this fits in my hand really comfortably. You know, it just... And you kind of know exactly where to put your fingers and thumbs because it's just worn in that way. And so again, this is a pointing to the kind of gradual nature of the path and how, you know, and he says again, he says, you know, the carpenter might not know this much has worn away today, this much wore away yesterday. And he relates that to the practice that we don't know day to day just what kind of transformation is happening. And yet looking back, perhaps over weeks or months, we might recognize, yeah, there's been a change. That kind of recognition has happened in my own practice quite a few times. The sense, like, even that first few months of like, oh yeah, things have changed. There is much more ease. More recently, I've just begun recognizing just the kind of the absence of chatter in the mind. You know, when I take a walk, it's like, wow, I know there used to be a lot more chatter in there. It's not, it's pretty quiet. And I don't know. You know, I think it's just kind of like the radio getting turned down a little bit, 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 and finally it's just really much quieter. I don't know how much happened, and it probably took a while for me to even recognize it. And so this very gradual nature of the way the path unfolds. Again, a natural process unfolds here. That just the using of the ads, this handle wears away. I was talking to some other teachers about these similes a few weeks ago, and one of the teachers commented in the reflection on this particular simile. She said, yeah, and you know, the carpenter doesn't even pick up the ads in order to wear the handle away. There's another purpose that they're using it for. And yet still, the handle wears away. And so this is, again, pointing to that kind of, in the hen simile, it's like even if she doesn't wish for her chicks to hatch out, they will hatch out because she's caring for them. And kind of similarly, he's not using it in order for this to happen. Oh, may the handle wear away more today. He's just using the tool. And the result, the natural consequence of using the tool is that there is this wearing away. And this to me is an interesting reflection of like the tools that we cultivate. You know, we are in some ways aiming towards the wearing away of our reactivity. And yet, we don't do that wearing away. We're picking up the tools to look at our experience, be curious about our experience. That curiosity, that's another way to express what we do in practice, is to just be curious about what's here. To let go of an agenda for it to change or to, actually the agenda wanting it to change can get in the way of a transformation. And so the purpose of the practice is curiosity and learning about what's happening in our minds. The wearing away of the reactivity happens almost as a side effect of doing that. Kind of like the wearing away of the handle is a side effect of just using that tool. There's a third one that also speaks to the wearing away, the gradual wearing away. But I want to stop for now. See if there's any comments or questions or reflections about what I've offered so far.
So I'm new to the practice. Sure. I'm pretty new to the practice and focusing on it with some intention. And it's really I'm like right in what you're talking about, where I'm really questioning if anything is happening here.
Uh-huh.
And yet there's something real when I find the spot, I know something really precious is in there. Precious isn't the right word, and it draws me back in.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's almost just luck that I'm continuing on with my practice, because it is very subtle.
Although sometimes, even at the beginning, I definitely had this at times. You know, it's like when I was meditating. Actually, it took me months before I started meditating, because I wasn't interested in meditation, but I was interested in understanding my mind. So I started with this in daily life. But then when I did start meditating, every now and then I would get a little bit of a sense. When we do touch into that kind of place where it's like, oh, this is what's happening, and it can be allowed, there's something that our system goes, oh, it kind of relaxes a little bit. And it's direct in the moment kind of feedback that it's helpful. Even though we don't really know what's happening there, there's something that happens, and you may be touching into that kind of place every now and then, just a little bit. I remember at one point, it's like I felt like I was just like this tight, stiff experience. My body was hurting, and the mind just kind of opened to that. And something about that, it was like, oh yeah, that's what's happening. And the mind could rest there, even though it was tight. It was almost like I felt like the entire structure of my bones and my muscles, however it was, the system could rest with that. And there was just a little taste of, oh, it's okay for it to be as it is. And that was also, you know, just these little tiny, like, hints that something different is happening. And those things do tend to draw us back, even though we don't really know, you know, it feels like it's just something for that moment, but, you know, it does tend to draw us back. There's a saying, the Dharma is good in the beginning, the middle, and the end. So, you know, however we engage, we can sometimes get that sense of, oh, yeah, there's something valuable here, even if I can't really describe what it is. Do you have anything more you'd like to?
That it's self-organizing.
Say more. What do you mean?
It's affirming or reassuring.
Yes.
To know that it's not in my under my control. Because if it was, I don't think it's really going to work.
Exactly. There were so many times I would go into the meditation hall and it'd be like, I can't do this. And it's like, well, yeah, I can't do this, you know. It's not my job to do the freedom. It's my job to just meet it. And yeah, that was kind of it was kind of a relief for me as well. It's like, oh, yeah, this is my job. My job's really simple. Can I just be with this? Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So you probably remember that for over 4 years I've been trying to notice when I get up from a chair. And it's really hard. I couldn't do it at all. And then I think I just put together different practices and things that I've heard, but I got to this other thing. So it was like throughout the day or when I was doing things, this really simple thing, right? I'd say, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm driving to work,
mm-hmm.
right? And every route throughout the day, I'd ask myself, what are you doing? I'm driving to work or, you know, I'm having breakfast. And then, well, how do you feel? You know, how does that feel in your body? And I say, well, I don't know, I'm tired or I'm relaxed or something. And then, well, what kind of mood are you in? And I said, well, maybe I'm angry or I'm anxious. And I just did this practice. And then for days, I noticed every single time I got up from a chair. And I mean, I've been really struggling with it. So it was like the eggs wouldn't hatch. And then I did this simple thing. And then after a while, that I didn't have to notice because it's like I'd figured it out. I didn't have to notice when I got from chairs. But I still do this thing where I just say what I'm doing. I'm sitting at IMC. I'm IMC.
And that's a beautiful expression of the simplicity of what we're talking about. It doesn't have to be, you know, detailed, like, you know, oh, what's going on in every little cell of my body. It's like, yeah, what's happening? I'm sitting at IMC. I'm feeling a little confused.
Yeah, exactly like that.
Yeah, I'm feeling some pressure on my butt. You know, it can be that simple. And that, when we do that with that kind of, you know, intentionality to stay with it, like the hen on her eggs, things change. Yeah, thank you. So it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention.